Welcome to the Deep Dive,
Yeah.
where we really try to cut through the noise for you. Today, we are diving deep into, well, a potentially groundbreaking medication. It might just redefine how we think about metabolic health, about weight management. It's called retatrutide. Now, you've probably heard about GLP-1s, Ozempic, Wegovy, that sort of thing. This takes, well, it takes it to a whole new level.
It really does. It builds on that science, but adds a significant new layer.
So our mission today is basically to unpack retatrutide for you. Everything you really need to know, how it works, this triple agonist mechanism, what the early trials look like, safety stuff naturally.
Critical points, yeah.
And interestingly, who might actually benefit? It might be a wider group than people initially think. You should probably expect some moments here. It could shift your perspective.
Definitely some interesting data to discuss.
And just quickly, this deep dive is brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com. Okay, let's get into it. How does this stuff actually work inside the body? Many of you listening will know about the earlier meds. First, we had semaglutide, you know, Ozempic, Wegovy. That targeted the GLP-1 receptor. Huge deal for weight loss for diabetes.
Absolutely revolutionized things.
Then came tirzepatide Mounjaro, Zepbound. That hit both GLP-1 and GIP receptors. And the results were, well, even better for many people. Maybe fewer side effects sometimes.
And what's really interesting about tirzepatide, specifically the GIP part, is where those receptors are. Research has shown they're pretty significantly present on fat cells themselves.
Oh, right. GLP-1 isn't really found there, is it?
Not much, no. So activating GIP on the adipose tissue on the fat cells seems to directly ramp up fatty mobilization, basically telling fat cells, okay, release that stored energy.
Ah, so it's not just about appetite. It's directly hitting the fat stores.
Exactly. That's a big reason why tirzepatide showed those improved results, beyond just making you feel less hungry.
Okay, that makes sense. But now we have retatrutide, the triple G, some folks are calling it. And this seems like a much bigger leap.
It is. This isn't just tweaking the formula. Retatrutide activates three receptors, GLP-1, GIP, and the glucagon receptor.
And adding glucagon.
Yeah.
That's the really different part, isn't it? Not just like the SEMA to TRZ transition.
It's a totally different. Adding glucagon activation opens up entirely different metabolic pathways. It's a fundamentally new approach in this class.
Wow. And the pace of this science is just incredible.
Isn't it? I mean, we're already seeing quad receptor agonists in phase one trials now, exploring even more complex interactions. It just shows how fast our understanding is evolving.
So, okay, let's break down these three mechanisms. GLP-1 and GIP, they hit spots like the hypothalamus in the brain, the gut, the pancreatic beta cells.
Right. And in the brain, that hypothalamus connection is key for reducing what people call food noise.
That constant thinking about food.
Yeah, exactly. It quiets that down.
Yeah.
And it increases early satiety. You feel full faster and you feel full longer. That's a huge psychological benefit for many.
And in the gut.
In the GI tract, they slow down gastric emptying. Your stomach takes longer to empty, which again helps with feeling full. And it also helps smooth out blood sugar spikes after you eat.
And the pancreas link. That's the original diabetes connection, right?
Precisely. They act on the beta cells in the pancreas, helping them recognize high blood sugar better and secrete insulin more appropriately. It helps restore that feedback loop.
Okay, so those two are powerful. But now, the glucagon receptor, you said that's the game changer. Where is that primarily found?
Primarily liver and kidneys, but also, and this is important, on adipose tissue, the fat tissue itself, similar to GIP in some ways, but with different effects.
And glucagon. Isn't that usually thought of as doing the opposite of insulin, like raising blood sugar?
That's its main known role, yes. It balances insulin. Insulin lowers blood sugar. Glucagon tells the liver to release stored glucose to prevent blood sugar from going too low. Think of it like, well, maybe the Lex Luthor to insulin Superman keeping things in check.
Okay, checks and balances.
But here's the crucial part for retatrutide. Activating glucagon receptors also directly stimulates lipolysis.
Fat breakdown.
Direct fat breakdown. It sort of mimics some effects of fasting, signaling the body to burn stored fat more readily. It can even increase ketone production, leading towards better metabolic flexibility.
Meaning the body gets better at switching between burning carbs and fats?
Exactly. More efficient fuel switching. And there's another layer, brown adipose tissue.
The good fat.
The metabolically active fat, yeah. Glucagon activates this brown fat, which helps regulate body temperature by burning energy. So it increases energy expenditure, boosts your metabolism, essentially turns up your internal furnace, burning more calories even when you're just sitting there. Thermogenesis.
Wow. Okay, so putting it all together, what this means for you listening is potentially eating less, because you feel full and the food noise is down,
uh-huh.
and your body's being told to burn more fat directly,
right.
and your overall metabolism gets a boost.
That's the idea. It's aiming for that perfect storm. Less energy in, more energy out, and preferentially pulling that energy from fat stores. A multi-pronged attack on metabolic dysfunction.
That sounds incredibly promising. Which leads us to the next big question. What are the actual results looking like in the clinic?
Right, the data. And it's pretty attention-grabbing, even at this stage.
So retatrutide is in phase 3 trials now.
Moving into phase 3, yes, it completed phase 2 successfully. But it's important context that phase 2 trial had about 338 participants. So, you know, it's solid data, but not thousands of people yet. Things could still evolve slightly in phase 3.
Got it. Good caveat. But what did that phase 2 show for weight loss?
It was really remarkable. People lost weight at every dose tested. The biggest drop was at the 8 milligram dose, almost 18% of body weight lost in just 24 weeks.
18% in less than 6 months.
Yeah. And then looking out further, at 48 weeks, so just under a year, folks on the 12 milligram dose lost, on average, almost 24% of their starting body weight.
24%. How does that stack up against, say, tirzepatide?
That's where it gets really interesting. Tirzepatide, in its big obesity trial, showed about 21% weight loss on average, but that was over 72 weeks.
So retatrutide showed more weight loss.
24% versus 21%.
In significantly less time. 48 weeks versus 72.
Exactly. More weight loss in 2/3 of the time. That's a major potential advantage. It's not just more weight, it's faster weight loss. For patients, that speed can be a huge motivator.
No kidding. Faster results often mean better adherence, right?
Absolutely. It keeps people engaged and hopeful.
And it's not just the pounds, is it? What about body composition? Mm-hmm. Fat versus muscle.
That's another potentially exciting part. The mechanism, especially with the glucagon action stimulating lipolysis and potentially preserving muscle via metabolic shifts, suggests we might see better fat loss and better muscle protection compared to just GLP-1 alone.
Which is healthier long term.
Much healthier. Improving that fat to muscle ratio is a far better indicator of real metabolic health improvement than just watching the scale number drop.
Okay, and I saw something about liver fat. That's a huge issue, MASLD.
Yes, metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease. There was a sub-study looking specifically at this, and the results were dramatic.
How dramatic?
At 24 weeks, liver fat dropped by over 81% with the 8 milligram dose and over 82% with the 12 milligram dose. And get this, at the 12 milligram dose, 86% of the participants reached normal liver fat levels.
Wow. From potentially having fatty liver disease to normal levels in 24 weeks.
Correct. And this wasn't just isolated. It correlated directly with improvements in insulin sensitivity and lipid metabolism overall. It suggests retatrutide might offer, well, almost a metabolic repair built in. Dropping liver fat by 80% that quickly, even without specific dietary changes in that study arm, is profound.
That really speaks to fixing the underlying machinery, not just managing symptoms.
It really does. Stabilizing energy, improving insulin function. It's comprehensive.
And for diabetes management itself, type 2 diabetes.
There was also a phase 2 trial comparing it directly to dulutide, another diabetes medication. Retatrutide showed, quote, clinically meaningful improvements in glycemic control, that's your A1C levels, alongside, again, those very strong weight reductions.
And does the glucagon part help with low blood sugar risk, hypoglycemia? That could be a problem with some GLP-1s.
That's a key hypothesis and a potential advantage. Because glucagon naturally raises blood sugar by telling the liver to release glucose, activating this receptor could provide a built-in safety mechanism against blood sugar dropping too low.
Interesting.
It could make it a much better option, theoretically, for people prone to hypoglycemia on current therapies. It offers that balance.
Okay, this is all fitting the typical profile.
Mm.
But you hinted earlier, there might be other, maybe surprising applications.
Well, this moves into territory based more on mechanism and some anecdotal or user community observations rather than large trials yet. But yes, some sources suggest retatrutide's unique metabolic aware could be beneficial for individuals really focused on peak performance or, let's say, enhanced users.
How so?
Yeah.
Like beyond just fat loss?
The thinking is it could act as a kind of metabolic upgrade or reset, helping restore dopamine sensitivity, which impacts focus and motivation. Maybe resensitizing GLP-1 GIP pathways if they've become less responsive.
Okay.
Plus the improvements in insulin sensitivity, flattening blood sugar curves for stable energy, and crucially, preserving lean mass during fat-cutting phases that's huge for athletes or body composition goals.
So less muscle loss while dieting down.
Potentially, yes. And also reducing inflammation, maybe water retention. It's less about just weight and more about optimizing the internal environment, resetting things.
Fascinating, a potential metabolic optimizer.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've heard the potentially really exciting results. Let's switch gears slightly. Nuances, safety, practical stuff.
Absolutely critical. And the first nuance is, as we said, it's not fully through phase three yet.
Right. Not enough people study long-term compared to approved drugs.
Exactly. The phase two data on 338 people is great, but larger numbers give you a clearer picture of rarer side effects or long-term impacts. We're still building that complete profile.
And there were some cardiac signals in phase two, weren't there? Small numbers, but worth mentioning.
Yes, that's true. A very small percentage, less than 4%, so maybe 3 to 6 individuals in that trial had some heart rhythm issues. Mostly supraventricular tachycardia, which is a faster heart rate originating above the ventricles.
How serious was that?
Reports described it generally as mild to moderate, and importantly, it's a type of tachycardia that's almost never fatal, but it was observed and needs monitoring.
Does the glucagon receptor itself explain that? Is it more stimulating?
It definitely could be. The glucagon receptor system is inherently more stimulatory than GLP-1 or GIP alone. It's, as some put it, another beast. So that extra layer of stimulation warrants careful monitoring as we get more data.
But context is important too, right? It's still in that incretin mimetic family.
Precisely. While the new receptor adds complexity, it belongs to a class of medications that, broadly speaking, we now know are relatively safe and have been studied extensively. It's about understanding the specifics of this new combination.
Okay. What about potential downsides or trade-offs? I read something suggesting maybe weaker appetite suppression.
That's a theoretical consideration, yeah. Because it's hitting three targets, the binding affinity, how tightly it holds on to the GLP-1 and GIP receptors, might be slightly less intense compared to a drug focused solely on one or two of them.
And those receptors are key for the fullness and delayed stomach emptying effects.
Right. So there's a question. Could the subjective feeling of appetite suppression or food noise reduction be slightly less pronounced for some users compared to, say, high-dose semaglutide or tirzepatide?
Interesting trade-off potentially. Less appetite hit, but more metabolic burn from the glucagon.
Possibly. We need more real-world data and phase three results to see how that plays out across a large population. It might depend on the individual. And again, that small phase two size means we just don't know everything yet. There could be other side effects or even other benefits that only show up in larger trials. Standard drug development process.
Okay, so bearing all that in mind, who really stands to benefit the most from retatrutide, assuming it progresses?
Well, several groups come to mind. First, definitely the non-responders, people already on max doses of semaglutide or tirzepatide who just aren't getting the weight loss or the blood sugar control they need.
This offers a completely different pathway.
Exactly. Second, maybe people who have really severe GI side effects on the current GLP-1s. If retatrutide does have a slightly weaker GLP-1 GIP interaction, it might be better tolerated by some, reducing nausea, vomiting, etc.
That would be a huge plus for them.
Absolutely. And third, as we discussed, patients at higher risk for hypoglycemia, that glucagon safety net could be really valuable.
Makes sense. It's broadening the options.
And fundamentally, it's important to frame it correctly. It's a tool, a powerful tool, yes, but one that allows you to implement lifestyle changes more effectively. Permanent health improvements come from permanent lifestyle changes. These drugs can be incredible supports for making those changes stick.
Right. Not a magic bullet replacement for diet and exercise, but a powerful facilitator.
Couldn't agree more.
So, if someone were to use this, based on what we know now, what are the best practices looking like?
The overwhelming advice echoed by early user experiences too is start low, go slow.
Standard titration.
Yes, maybe start at 1 or 2 milligrams, increase by 1 or 2 milligrams every 4 weeks, really based on your individual tolerance. Let your body adapt. That minimizes side effects.
And sourcing, always crucial.
Absolutely critical. Get it from a legitimate source, a licensed physician prescribing through a reputable compounding pharmacy once available, or eventually the commercial product. Avoid random websites like the plague. It's just not worth the risk.
Totally agree. And use it alongside lifestyle changes, right?
Essential. Combine it with exercise, combine it with nutritional interventions. It works best as part of a holistic plan.
And for those enhanced users or performance-focused individuals you mentioned, any specific considerations there?
Again, this is more nuanced, but typically protocols might involve dosing 3 to 4 times per week subcutaneously, often in the morning while fasted. There might also be specific timing needed if other compounds are involved, like separating it from growth hormone injections, or maybe delaying oral meds for a couple of hours after the retatrutide dose because of the delayed gastric emptying. It requires careful planning
and monitoring, blood work.
Crucial for anyone using these potent compounds, especially off-label or for optimization, regular blood work may be every 4 weeks, initially checking things like fasting insulin, C-reactive protein for inflammation, glucose, liver enzymes, maybe IGF-1. It gives you real-time feedback on how your body's responding.
Smart. Data-driven decisions about your own health.
That's the goal. Informed self-management.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what's the big picture takeaway on retatrutide?
I mean, we've seen it's got this unique triple receptor action. It's not just another GLP-1.
Definitely not.
It offers a really different, potentially more potent approach. The early results for weight loss, body composition, liver fat, diabetes control, they're genuinely remarkable.
And it hints at these broader uses, potentially, as a metabolic optimizer.
Right. So while we absolutely need the phase 3 data and FDA review, the signs are pointing towards this being a potential game changer. A significant new tool in the toolkit for doctors and for individuals looking to seriously tackle metabolic health issues.
It really feels like the next evolution in this space.
It certainly looks that way.
Okay, so here's a final thought for you, our listeners, to mull over. We've talked about retatrutide managing weight, improving diabetes, reducing liver fat. But think bigger. If this drug can truly re-engineer metabolic pathways, so profoundly boosting energy expenditure, changing fuel use, maybe even impacting inflammation and cellular health, what does that imply? What possibilities might this kind of metabolic optimizer open up, not just for treating disease, but maybe for extending healthy lifespan, for challenging our basic understanding of aging and physiology? It goes way beyond just weight loss, doesn't it?
It's a fascinating question about where the science could ultimately lead. Deep implications.
Something to think about on your own health journey. And remember, this deep dive was brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com.